Good evening, everyone. Yes. Okay. We're on it. Okay. We usually do. Okay. So tonight.
I don't recall signing a release.
That's right. Tonight, our topic is privacy. And there are so many different aspects to this conversation, especially now in 2019. It's more nuanced and more complicated than ever, but it's also probably more important to have this conversation than ever. And the place to start to think about this conversation, perhaps, is the cloud. It's a thing, the cloud. Familiar with this?
A little.
Oh, yeah. That's when you get a new
phone. Just a little.
When you get a new phone, cloud. You get every, Michael's pictures. Oh.
The cloud. So I can think of perhaps two important contexts in which the cloud comes up. The first one, when we're thinking about this conversation about privacy and contemporary life, the first one is, it appears in Parshas Yisro, when the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to come to meet us, Ba'av Ha'anan. He's going to meet us in the cloud. That's what it says. And then, later, in Parshas Achrei Mos, we find, you know, as many Mefarshim say, that the Mishkan...
To click accept cookies and...
Okay, good, we'll get. In the Mishkan, which many of Mefarshim say is an extension of Har Sinai, what does the Torah tell us? Be'onan Eroi Ela Kaporis. Hashem Yisbarach will meet us in the Kaporis, in between the Kruvim, in a cloud. So the way that apparently HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to mediate our relationship is through a cloud. And the question is, why should that be? Why is it that there is a cloud that descends on Har Sinai, there's a cloud of the Ketores in the Mishkan, that is the medium through which we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there is an awesome essay for those who are interested in this. I can get you the whole thing. Dr. Lamb, many years ago, should live and be well, he published an essay in a honorary volume, I think in remembrance of Chacham Gaon, one of the Sephardic rabbis in YU, and then he later published it in his collection of essays, an amazing essay called Tznius, a Universal Concept. And in this essay, he quotes a principle from Rav Soloveitchik, a really fascinating core principle. And he quotes, he says that the Rav told them, I don't know, he doesn't say where he heard this from the Rav, but he must have heard it from him at some point. He says that the Rav taught them that whenever, that there are two concepts that go together hand in hand. Whenever you find Kedusha, you find Hester. Wherever you find sanctity, you find concealment. Moshe Rabbeinu appears at the bush, and he recognizes that there's Hashras HaShechina, so what does he instinctively do? Besides taking off his shoes, that he does because Ribbono Shel Olam tells him. What does he do instinctively? That's right, Vayaster Moshe Panav. Why? Ki yarei mehabit al ho'elokim. Because he had a measure of awe not to look. Because when something has holiness, it has a measure of concealment. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Kvod Elokim, the honor of Hashem, Haster Davar. It should be hidden away. If you think about it spatially, where is the most sanctified place on earth? In the concept of Kedushas Makom, it's the Kodesh HaKadoshim. How many people have access to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Right? How often do the right one time a year, and even that, if they used to have, they would have workers. You know, they would have construction workers who would, you know, they halavai shibana mesa mikdash. You'll have gainful employment for Michael. He'll be at work, so they have a special. That's true, but think about this: how would they bring the guys into work in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? You know what they would do? The Mishnah describes they would have a box that was closed on three sides and open on one side. They would put the guy in a box, like a cherry picker box, and they would lower them in. And the only thing they could see was the area that they were working on. Because it's not proper that, you know, Stam workmen, they need to be in the Kodesh HaKadosh because they need to fix whatever repairs needed to be made. They had guys. But you can't just look around, because by definition, whenever you have Kedusha, you have concealment. And then the opposite of that, for example, the Mishnah says in Midos, what happens when the Greeks arrived in the Beis HaMikdash? So they didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but they breached 13, they smashed 13 entry points to signify that we have access. There's no such thing as, you know, no access. There's no such thing as a filter, the Sorig. There's no such thing as, you know, you can't come in. Everybody can come in. And so that was an element of diminishing the Kedusha Smakom, because the whole idea of Kedusha is that something is going to be concealed. So that's the thesis that Rav Soloveitchik develops. And I was thinking to myself, how do I understand this? What is he getting at? What does he mean when he says that Kedusha and Hester are correlated? And I wonder if what it means is that in our world, especially today, you know what's very popular? Metrics. Metrics are very popular. How do you measure success? How do you measure success in business? How do you measure success in the nonprofit circle? How do you measure all aspects of life? You know, people are always, I'm sure, in different professions, people are they're looking for measures. How do you know how we're succeeding? So in this world, everything can be measured. You can measure it in an amount of space that it takes up, in an amount of, you know, access points that you have, an amount of customers that you have. Everything is measurable. Everything in Olam Hazeh, you can see it. You can figure out how big and how small and how much. But when you talk about spirituality, by definition, that transcends this world. And it cannot be measured. You can't measure how much ruchnius is there. That doesn't translate. So maybe the idea is that if Kedusha, if sanctity, if the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was something that was apparent, if you could view it, then you could measure it. You could say there's X number of units of Kedusha compared to this place where there's Y number of Kedusha units. But the Rosh Hashanah, it's not like that. Kedusha is not something that you can measure because it's beyond this world. So by definition, anytime you encounter something that has Kedusha, that has sanctity, that sanctity means it's beyond, it's transcendent. It's beyond measure, so you're supposed to keep it beyond the eye. Because if you can see it, you can measure it. You can say it begins here and it ends there.
What about understanding, beyond understanding as well?
So I would argue that there are some elements that are beyond understanding, then there are some that are not. And that's why it's not surprising to me, but what Uri is alluding to is the fact that it's not totally beyond our reach. There is this way of accessing it, but it's not totally accessible. You can reach it, but you can't see it. You can feel it and hear it, but you can't measure it.
You can measure time, but you cannot see it.
Okay, so Kedusha does have an element, an imprint in time, but maybe now the image of the cloud makes a lot of sense. Because the Rosh Hashanah says, I'll be accessible to you, but it's not something that you can just see. So a cloud is permeable. You can walk through a cloud. You can fly, you know, when you hit 10,000 feet and it stops, you know, shaking, and outside you see there's no clouds. You can fly through a cloud, but you just can't see through it. So the Rebbe says, I'll come to meet you at Har Sinai. I'll come to meet you in the Mishkan, but don't think that you're going to be able to just see it. It's not something that's measurable. It's something that's transcendent. So that's, when we think about privacy, if we want to get back deep down, I think that is one building block that we have to start with. The second building block is, so what does this whole Shtickle Torah about Hester and Kedusha have to do with me? So to appreciate that, I want to share with you a story. I mamish love this story. And I found this book. I bought it used online somewhere because I was traveling somewhere. And you can learn a lot about people when you look at their library. So I was at someone's, one of these, it was somewhere, and I was at some of one of these like Mincha Mariv Friday night minions get-togethers. So I'm in this house for Mincha Mariv Friday night, and I see on the wall the Balabas has some interesting books that I had never seen. So one of them was this little old book by Dr. Tversky, by Abraham J. Tversky, called Life's Too Short. And this was before I became a super devotee of Dr. Tversky, so I pulled it off the wall. Right, so this was before I became a chassid of his. So I pulled it off the wall, and I came across the opening story. that he tells here about himself, which is absolutely amazing. I was totally shocked when I saw the story. I made a mental note when I went home from shul. I'm like, after Shabbos, I got to find this book. So I bought it used. He describes how in 1965, he was the director of psychiatry of a major psychiatric hospital. And that served a population of 3 million people, in addition to having his own population of 300 psychiatric patients that he was taking care of. And after a period of time where he was completely overwhelmed and totally burnt out, he needed a break. So he decided he's going to go on vacation. He's got to get a break. He's got to get away. And the only thing that he wanted was quiet. So he decides he's going to go somewhere where it's absolutely going to be off the grid. It's going to be peace and quiet. He doesn't want Disney. He doesn't want an amusement park. He just wants to sit and quiet. So someone told him, you know where you should go? You should go to Hot Springs, Arkansas. They have mineral baths there. It's very quiet. And he has a bad back, so he'll be able to rejuvenate himself a little bit. You know, he studied here. He's from Milwaukee, of course. He studied in Marquette. That's where he studied psychiatry. So he describes how he checked into the hotel, and he goes, there's a special spa where they give you a cubicle and a whirlpool where you're supposed to relax. So he has an attendant who takes him to his little spa, and he describes, says, this was paradise. Not only was the water warm, he was totally out of reach. No police could call him, no emergency room physicians, no patients, nobody. So he describes how after 6 or 7 minutes, he got out of the bath, and he told the attendant how wonderful it was. He said it was great, and it was just what he needed. The attendant politely told me, he says, that I had to return to the bath. The treatment began with soaking for 25 minutes. He says, I got back in the bath, and after 5 more minutes, I emerged again. I told the guy, he says, I told the attendant, it's enough. I can't take it anymore. He instructed me, he says, that if I did not stay there for the full 25 minutes, I would not be able to complete the treatment. He says, what had begun as heaven was now purgatory. I watched the second hand on the clock move slowly. Each minute seemed an hour, and the final 10 minutes of the bath were an eternity, barely tolerable. So he says, I got out of this thing, and I'm thinking to myself, what is happening? What's this all about? He says, I realized that a lot of people, many people, are not capable of relaxing. He says, they'll find lots of distractions. They'll watch a ball game. They'll go to an amusement park. They'll eat a few pints of ice cream, whatever it is. But he says, we have a problem of relaxing. He says, what happened was when I went to this cubicle, I was deprived of all diversions. There was nobody to talk to, nothing to watch, nothing to do. And I was left alone by myself. And I realized, he says, I didn't like myself. I wasn't comfortable just being with myself. And he went on, he says, at the ripe old age of 38, having been a practicing psychiatrist for 5 years, I began to ask myself, why don't I like myself? And he went on this whole exploration of self-awareness of what he had been presenting to other people and what he felt like he truly was at his core and why he didn't like that and why he wasn't comfortable just being alone in a bathtub for 25 minutes. And it became a whole journey about self-esteem and self-exploration. That's the Maisa Shahaya that he tells. And I thought it was such an interesting story. It certainly made me feel better about myself. But the idea that we need to try to examine how to be comfortable with ourselves and thinking about what truly makes ourselves. You know, he's one of the things he's struggling with is, well, he's a big shot psychiatrist and he has all these patients, but he feels like really he's somewhat inadequate. And what is he really? And, you know, he gets a speaking lecture and he takes money or he doesn't take money. How does he figure himself out? So we need to go through that process. We need to think about ourselves. How do we figure ourselves out? And through that process, if we drill down to what we really are, to be comfortable with ourselves, to define ourselves, we need to come back to the basic yesod of what a person really is and who I am. And once I get to that, I can understand what my abilities are and what my role is in this world and then what I can accomplish and then be comfortable with that. Because until I figure that out, I'm not going to be comfortable with myself. I'm just going to be, you know, testing the waters and figuring and finding. So each one of us deep down is a neshama. It's a spark of godliness. And that spiritual core is the basic yesod of how I build up my self-esteem, of how I build my sense of self, my personality. So I say to myself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God gave me a spark that leads to a meaningful life, that leads to a life that I have a purpose in this world, and I have to figure out now, what am I really? What are my character traits? What are the aspects of my psychological and emotional makeup that will enable me to contribute to the world in whatever way I'm supposed to do? And then I can build out from there so I can be true to myself, to my sense of self, to my neshama. Well, where are we going to find that neshama? How are we going to identify it? You know, where do you go to find that? So there is an interesting quote. There's a guy who's like a motivational educator, speaker. He's a spiritually inclined guy. His name is Parker Palmer. He has a yesod, a very interesting idea. He says, the soul is like a wild animal. Tough, resilient, savvy, self-sufficient, yet exceedingly shy. The soul is shy. It's like a wild animal. If we want to see a wild animal, what's the last thing we should do, he says? The last thing we should do, is to go crashing through the woods, shouting for the creature to come out. But if we are willing to walk quietly into the woods and sit silently for an hour or two at the base of a tree, the creature we are waiting for may well emerge. And out of the corner of an eye, we will catch a glimpse of the precious wildness we seek. When I came across this quote, I saw that's the instant, that's the same yesod, that to be connected to our neshama, we require quietness and stillness, not distractions, not loudness, but just some solitude, just without distractions, without anybody else. And with these two things together, the idea of associating Kedusha and Hester and understanding that each one of us at our core is a spirit, is a neshama, and that's going to drive what we are and who we are, I think with this in mind, we can have a conversation about privacy. So what I did was, instead of Mar Makomo sheets for tonight, I put together an outline, which is what we'll use to go through together, because there are two dimensions.
You want your tea?
What's that?
You want your tea?
No, I'm good, thank you. I have this delicious seltzer. Italian sparkling water. Italian? Plus for Italian, it's not Mexican.
That's like green.
They don't provide Mexican. All right, this is not Mexican. Okay, everybody has sheets. There should be enough for everybody.
He's American now.
That's right.
You guys keep making this joke, and I'm gonna make a wall around you.
Baruch Hashem. Okay, so there are two planes. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakol Nivrah. There are two planes on which we can think about this observation, the personal and then the interpersonal. The first one, the aspect of a personal dimension of Kedusha of Hester and the idea of developing our soul in quiet, is that the truth is if we define ourselves as a neshama, then as an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need to be hidden. We need to have a space which is private. So there was a great philosopher, a great Jewish thinker, whose name was Dr. Marvin Fox. So he was a professor for many years at OSU in Columbus, and he wrote a tradition article about Rav Soloveitchik. And in this article, the article is called The Rav as Maspid. And he reviews a series of six hespedim that Rav Soloveitchik gave for different people. And he demonstrates how the Rav was just an incredible maspid, in addition to everything else, as you can imagine. And so, in the context of this article, which is very interesting, he quotes a different article from another very important figure named Dr. Hillel Seidman. Hillel Seidman, some of you know, is the author of the Warsaw Ghetto Diaries. So he was in the ghetto, he then survived, came to America, went back, put together the Ksavim. It's just this alone is an incredible story. So apparently, Hillel Simon was a scholar, was a journalist. So he interviewed Rav Soloveitchik, and he wrote up in Yiddish, in a Yiddish newspaper, a 7-part essay dictated and reviewed by Rav Soloveitchik about one thesis. And that is that the individual, the person, is like a Sefer Torah. Every person is like a Sefer Torah. That was the thesis of this series of newspaper articles that Hillel Simon, Zichrono Livracha, did as an interview with the Rav. Now, in what respect is a person like a Sefer Torah? What would you say? Well, one is that, lo aleinu, if God forbid a person is present, b'shas yitzias neshama, when someone passes away, when the soul leaves, so what's the din of the Gemara, strictly speaking? A person has to tear kriya. Why does a person have to tear kriya when a person witnesses someone who leaves the world? Because the Gemara has an expression, k'sefer Torah shenisraf. A person is like a sefer Torah that was burned, and it's such a tragedy that a person is required to rend their garments, lo aleinu. The idea of a sefer Torah is that the sefer Torah has the core kedusha. Let's say in a shul, many rishonim say the whole kedusha, the Beis HaKnesses, emanates from the fact that the sefer Torah is there. Where does the kedusha come from? A sefer Torah. Why does the sefer have kedusha in and of itself? What is that? What is the source of the kedusha of a sefer Torah? It's the name of Hashem, what we call Azkaros. The Azkaros in the Sefer Torah, that lend the Kedusha to the Sefer Torah. So the Azkaros, that's the name of God, that's godliness printed on a piece of paper. So every person now is an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, how do we treat a Sefer Torah as a Dover Shebe Kedusha? Did you ever see anybody handle a Sefer Torah with their bare hands? Sometimes it happens that when they're trying to do Galila or Hagba, the cloth gets misaligned. Right? You always use a talis. The Gemara says the end of Megillah. It's no one, you take a Sefer Torah with your hand, your bare hand. You hold on to the wooden handles, the Atzei Chaim. You never touch the cloth of Sefer Torah with your hands. Where does the Sefer Torah have to stay? It stays in the Aron Kodesh. There is actually an Easter. You're not allowed to take a Sefer Torah out for no reason. Right, the Rav will tell us, right? You can't just take a Sefer Torah out because you want to, you know, you want to take it out for no reason. You have to take it out just for learning, or maybe if you need to fix it, or for some, you need to roll it for the next Kriyas HaTorah, but you can't just take it out for no reason. And it has to stay in the Aron, and not only does it stay in the Aron, every Sefer Torah has a mantel. So we see, you see the image, the visual image, that the Sefer Torah as this source of Kedusha, it remains concealed. It's the Hester. So that means every person, if we are a spark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we are a Sefer Torah, so then we're going to keep ourselves in this same spirit of hiddenness as an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We go back to the antithesis of this. We talked about the Greeks who pierced the Heichal. It's interesting to me. I'm not a great art historian, but I find it's very interesting that many artists and especially sculptors in the Greek tradition, they must have had a fundraising problem because they can afford to sculpt amazing people. They can't afford a pair of pants, not shorts. It's nothing. It's like unbelievable. But if your view of the human body is only defining the external, the outside, so then there's no reason to cover anything up. But if what your image of a person is like a Sefer Torah, of a Tzelem Elokim, of an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so there's an element of the Kel Mistatar, of God being hidden, of the cloud, that not everything, now flip the page, not everything is seen. But it's not just because we are an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's that we are B'Tzelem Elokim, that we are mirroring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Dr. Lam has another article. This is published in Faith and Doubt. This is from an earlier piece that he did. He actually has a couple of, Rabbi Lam has a couple of amazing pieces on privacy and sneas in general, which are fantastic. So this is about the Fourth Amendment, which is the constitutional right that people have in this country to privacy. So he points out, he says, man, you see it on the top of your page, man is fundamentally inscrutable in that according to Judaism, he is more than just natura, but also persona. He is possessed of a mysterious, vital center of personality. which transcends the sum of his natural, physiological, and psychological properties. But not only is he mysterious, he also should be. And the extension of his free and undetermined center of personality constitutes the boundaries of his selfhood and his selfhood, and hence his privacy. Meaning, there is an element of us that's supposed to be mysterious, that is supposed to be known only to us. It's unique to us. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is an aspect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is mysterious. And the same way that there is something mysterious about him, there's something mysterious about us. And what defines us as an individual, says Dr. Lamb, actually is a mysterious element of us that nobody else knows, that makes us distinct. And when we expose everything, then we're losing that uniqueness, that mysterious quality of who we are, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a mysterious element that cannot be fully grasped. We are B'Tselem Elohim. So there is a very interesting parallel to this, or extension of this, in a Hesped. This is one of those Hespedim that's talked about by Dr. Fox. It's published in this volume called Divrei Hagos Va'aracha that Rav Soloveitchik delivered for Rav Zev Gold. Rav Zev Gold, he died in 1956. He was an Eastern European Rav who then came to America and he was a founding leader of the Mizrahi in America. He went around, he was a Rav in several communities. He went around founding religious Zionist institutions in America, and then he made Aliyah. He was a very close confidant of Rav Meir Berlin and Rav Meir Bar Ilan. So he was one of the greatest religious Zionist actors. He was a signatory on the Israeli, I believe he was a signatory on the Israeli Declaration of Independence, if I'm not mistaken. So when he died, Rav Soloveitchik delivered a hesped for him. And he has something very interesting that he describes about Rav Zev Gold. Because he says, there are certain aspects of Kedusha, of sanctity, that everybody knows. There's Kedusha of Shabbos, Yontif, everyone knows that. He says, then there's another kind of Kedusha. There is a Rosh Chodesh Kedusha. Today was Rosh Chodesh. Not too much exciting happened. You know, it's hard to see. But if we tap into the spiritual nature of that day, the Rav says there's a tremendous hidden Kedusha. And he says that there is an aspect of Kedusha, of sanctity, which is by design hidden. It's by design not something that is celebrated in the public square. And he brings this up to describe Rav Zev Gold, who was more of a shy, intra-focused person. In the context of this, he says something amazing about himself. He says, I want you to know that from my childhood, said the Rav, he said, I experienced this idea of Kedusha and privacy in my own life. He says, my father would say that your emotional world, your emotional self, that's personal. And he said that kol shaharegesh, anything that the sense, that feeling, that emotion is kodesh yoser, v'kol shu intimi yoser, something that's more intimate, ton hu yoser geniza b'mamakim, needs to be even more hidden. Points of intimacy need to be shrouded in privacy. He says the external area where people are active, that needs to be separate from the kodesh hakodashim, which is your emotional center. Now, Rav Soloveitchik describes, it happens to be that his father was very extreme in this way, he describes that his father never kissed him. Because his father never expressed externally how he felt. Even though the Rav was so connected to him, and was so emotionally tied to him, and he says, I could tell that he loved me so much. He only said, and if I'm not mistaken, Rav Soloveitchik's parents were not at his wedding because they were already in New York and he got married in Vilna. He says that when my father would leave me, he would shake my hand and say, Lech l'shalom v'yishmerecha ha'elokim. And he says someone else who was a stranger who didn't know our relationship would say, wow, he's really a cold Litvak, which I want to say. But he says, you don't understand. He says, "Benishmas Abamari Hutamashu Miyosef Hanitzri." There was something about my father's spirit that kept that inside, and we can only communicate it emotionally, spiritually. And I wonder if this is tied up with the same idea that a person, if we define ourselves as an neshama, then the emotional world, where does the emotional world relate to? Where does that center? Not in the physical, not in our body, it centers in our neshama. So the deeper the emotional experience, the more private it is. That's why there were a bunch of rabbis, everybody was in, it was hanging around in the rabbinic circles. Everybody was very outraged about this. I don't know, because I'm not on Facebook or Twitter, but apparently there was some couple somewhere, I don't know who they are, or wherever they are, that took a selfie in the yichud room and posted it on Facebook. So, I don't know, I didn't see what... So, I don't know. But the point is, Rav Soloveitchik says, if this is, forget about the other person, just the idea of an intimate emotional moment, that belongs to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Why? Because we need to see ourselves similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the second element. And the third element, it's not just that we are an extension of Hashem, that we are a mirror image of Hashem, it's that where are we going to cultivate our relationship with Hashem? In the private, intimate space. There is a pasuk that many of us know, where the pasuk describes that Micha, he asks, Higlecha Adam HaTov, how do you know what's good for you? So you're supposed to do the right thing and do justice. And the end of that pasuk is Vahatznei Aleches Im Elokecha. What does it mean? Hatznei Aleches Im Elokecha. What does it mean? Hatznei Aleches literally means, like Milosh and Tznias, a person should be modest. But Rashi has a second pirush there, which I think is amazing. The second pirush in Rashi in Hatznei Aleches is Hatznei Aleches Im Elokecha means, he says that a person, when, let's say, for example, we'll take Michael for a minute because he knows, everybody knows this would never happen. But let's say I insulted Michael in front of everybody at the table. There we go. So let's say I insulted Michael. So a normal person who was insulted in front of 10 people, you know what he would say to me after the shiur when I went to apologize? He'd say, Shkoyach, you're apologizing for me outside. You should apologize in front of the 15 people in front of whom you insulted to me. So Rashi says, the Rebbe Shlomo is not like that. The Rebbe Shlomo says, no matter where you insult me, as long as you come to me privately and we can have an eye to eye, we can have a heart to heart talk, I'm good with that. That's how Rashi, in the second Pirish, describes Hatznei Aleches Im Elokecha. It doesn't mean be humble because God is watching you. It means be quiet in your conversations with Hashem Yisbarach. When you talk to God, He's okay with just a quiet conversation. Nobody else needs to be there. So the whole notion of privacy, of a personal, quiet relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's individual, it's going to thrive in Hatznei Aleches Im Elokecha. It's not going to be demonstrative and demonstrable in front of everybody else. It's going to be in the quiet recesses of my spiritual life, in my neshama. My neshama's connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And where do we see this in an amazing way? So this has a terrific essay by Rabbi Karmi as the editor of Tradition. This was in the summer of 2010. So he has an editorial note called, "He Thought She Was Drunk." Who is he referring to? He thought she was drunk? That's right. Chana. So what happens? Chana comes, she's pouring out her heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She's having a one-on-one conversation. And Eli thinks, he's never seen anyone daven like this before. This is incredible. He thinks she's inebriated. And she says, no, okay. What does she say? She says, I'm a broken woman. I've come to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does Eli not say to her next? What does he not ask her? Forgiveness. What's that? Okay, he doesn't ask her forgiveness. He blesses her. What does he not ask her?
Does he ask her what happened?
That's right. What does he say to her? He just says to her, Yitein Hashem lach eshelaseich. God should answer your prayers. And Rabbi Karmi points out something. I never noticed this. It's an incredible einfall. He says, what is Eli doing? He's saying, I respect your private moment with the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you want to tell me what's going on, Gesundheit, I'm all ears. I'm listening. I'm ready to help you. I'm ready to support you. But if you don't want to tell me, Hashem should answer your prayers. Because I respect the fact that you are having a personal moment with HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Hatznei Alecha Sim Elokecha, and it's not my business. I'm not here, the big shot, even though he was, the Gadol Hador. He could have said, tell me what's wrong. Let me hear your issues. I can daven for you. He doesn't say that at all. He gives her a bracha. And that bracha comes true. Yitein Hashem Lach. He should answer your prayers. But he doesn't invade her privacy. It's the respect of the private moment that this woman is having as the model for tefillah. Of course, the Gemara Bracha says, that's a private moment between Chana and the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is what developing ourselves on a spiritual level means. So this is all piece number one. Our personal development as a soul, as a spark of godliness, so as an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a mirror of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as cultivating our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need privacy. That's Aleph. But then there's Beis, there's another issue, and that is the interpersonal plane. There was some amazing, I could send you the article, I printed the link here, you can click on it, a very, very interesting article. And that is that to create interpersonal relationships, we also need privacy. Look at this article. You'll take a look when you have time afterwards if you're interested in the New York Times. Years ago, the New York Times had a Sunday Review article called We Want Privacy But Can't Stop Sharing. The whole notion of developing a sense of myself and getting to be in touch with who I am, so that's very personal. That comes back to our neshama, our self-awareness, our self-identification. So that's self-knowledge. That's a personal, private space. So the word ladas, yediya, is knowledge, knowing ourselves, but also creating intimate bonds. V'ha'adam yada eschava ishto. So physical intimacy and emotional intimacy, creating bonds, are connected to each other. So there was some research done by a couple of guys in the 70s where they found that the currency to creating intimacy and relationships and emotional connections with people is actually created through privacy. Meaning, through the medium of navigating privacy. How you share information with someone, that regulates the kind of relationship you have with them. And the way that we develop and further relationships is by sharing increased amounts of personal information, of creating greater yediya. So let's say, you know, I had this experience in my own life. Let's say I went to Grand Central on a date with a girl. Soda is expensive, but the venue is very inexpensive, I'm just saying. And it's beautiful. It's a very nice indoor venue if you're dating in January in New York and you don't have a car. It's good. So let's say you're on a first date in Grand Central. So how much do you share with this total stranger who, yes, maybe five people called you to go out with this girl and you finally said yes after the fifth time, which was a good idea in retrospect, just saying. You don't share all of your personal life. You don't share all of your most intimate secrets with the person on the first date. You share with them one level. And then later, maybe you take a train, you go to the Museum of Television and Radio, or you go to the Met, or you go, you know, to Bryant Park, or you go one thing at a time and after, or you go to a Devils Rangers game, six rows from the ice. So as you develop a relationship, you start sharing more and more information about yourself and about the other person. And that is the currency to create deeper intimate bonds with people. Well, what happens when there is no gradual sharing of information because everything is exposed? Well, then everything is cheapened because there are no intimate moments. There are no, you know, there are no spaces where you can say this is special and this is only for you and no one else knows this, or some people know this, but when everything is posted, everything is open, when there is no privacy, then your sense of self and your ability to share that with somebody else is severely limited. So the article in the Times starts out, imagine we had a world with no doors. No doors anywhere. No doors in the front door of your house. No doors on the locker room. No doors in a bedroom. Every door was open. How would we feel? We'd feel totally exposed. And there wouldn't be any layers of, yes, people are welcome in my living room. People are welcome in my kitchen. They're not welcome in my bedroom. They're certainly not welcome in my bathroom. You know, that is a way of creating those spaces for different people. So what does Bilam say when he looks down from the mountaintop at the people? He says, Matovu alecha Yaakov. So what does the Gemara say in Bava Basra? He saw she'ein peschei mechuvanim zeh lazeh, that their doors weren't opposite each other. Because he understood that these people, they have families, they have a social structure. The interpersonal way that they navigate their relationships is predicated on privacy. That they have doors. That when one person opens a door, it's not looking into somebody else's bathroom. When the Rebbeinu Shlom wants to give us the image of a relationship, especially between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the most intimate space, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we have the Kruvim. So how did Chazal describe Lo Aleinu at the time of the Churban? So they tore down the Parochas and they looked in. And what did they see? They saw the Kruvim Me'urim Zebezeh. They were embracing each other in an intimate embrace. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's an intimate, so quote-unquote, interpersonal space between these two Kruvim. This intimacy, this closeness, it's protected by the parochas. You can't just look in there. They're not going to create that intimate moment if everybody's looking. And that brings us back to the cloud. The cloud, that's the covering. That's the Ohel Moed. That's the Anane Kavod. That's the idea that to build a relationship, the two entities, whether they're friends or spouses or family members, there needs to be a measure of privacy. And the halacha reflects this need, especially on an interpersonal level. You know, there's a din in the beginning of Maseches Bava Basra. The first mishnah Bava Basra is about building walls, fences between neighbors. So why do you have to have a wall between neighbors? So the Gemara says Hezek Ria. So what is Hezek Ria? So there are different interpretations, but the Rashba writes in a tshuva. He says, you know what Hezek Ria is? That if you build a house right next to my house, and every time you look out your window, you're looking into my backyard, or into my patio, or into my bedroom, it's a lack of tznius. So you have to have boundaries. You have to have shades. In those days, they didn't have shades. But today, you have to have shades. You have to have privacy in your home to have the development of a relationship. Very famous, Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, in Ashkenaz, quoted by the Tshuvas Maharam of Rutenberg, the Chaim not to open somebody else's mail. Why? Because when I send you a letter, that is a way of building a connection. What's that?
Pre-Hippolos.
That's it. Why is that? Because we want to be able to respect the ability of people to build a kesher. In the old days, people used to write on the back of a letter, they used to write four letters. Pei, Gimel, Yud, Nun, Pagin. Why would they write Pagin? After Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, after this ban, Pagin stands for Poreitz Geder Yishchenu Nachash. If you breach this fence, you should be bitten by the snake of the rabbis and die. They write that on the back of a letter. Don't open my letter. That's like the bottom of the email. On the bottom of your email, it should say, you know, the gigantic confidentiality. Just write Pagin. Poreitz Geder Yishchenu Nachash.
That was an I or Y.
Because if somebody is sending you a message, it's meant for you and it's not meant for anybody else. And if somebody else is reading it, that's breaking down the privacy of the connection that we're building. And finally, the Gemara in Yuma, the Gemara in the beginning of Yuma says, you know, the Pasuk says a million times in the Chumash, Vayadav Hashem al Moshe, Lamor. So growing up, I always took that for granted. That's what we learned sing-song in Chumash. And Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, right? Nothing wrong with that. But until the Gemara asked the question, duh, I should have thought of this. Why does it have to say, Vayadav Hashem al Moshe lemor? It just said, Vayadav Hashem al Moshe. So you know what the Gemara says? Had it not said lemor, saying, meaning, or as kids we translate, saying, like to say, but lemor really means to say. To say to whom? To say to us. The Gemara says in Yuma, had the Pasuk not said Lamor, Moshe Rabbeinu would have had to have kept every conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam confidential. He would have had no right to share what the Ribbono Shel Olam told him. Because the Gemara says, you learn from this, every conversation you have with anyone, even, forget Lashon Hara, Rechilos, Motzi Shemra, not talking about anything bad. A Stam conversation, the Gemara says, is assumed to be confidential, unless the person says Lamor. Because if we're having a conversation, it's not anybody else's business. We're developing a relationship, it's between us, it's not for anybody else. And unless Hashem Yisbarach had given him the permission and the responsibility to tell us what it says, he wouldn't have told us. So if we come back to where we started of the idea of Kedusha and defining ourselves as a neshama and our journey and our spiritual growth, we can see how privacy is going to play a huge role. Developing ourselves in our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in our own way of following Hashem, of closeness to Hashem, of exploring ourselves, but also as it relates to other people. Privacy is crucial to be able to create healthy interpersonal relationships. And that's why the halacha and the Torah places a strong emphasis on privacy. Now, how to navigate exactly how everybody's going to apply this in their own lives is a personal choice, but it comes back to the value that the Torah and the halacha and the Ribbono Shel Olam are clearly setting out for us to create this value of privacy in our lives. Food for thought.